Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
My goal was always to be good American, be good citizen. What can I do to make our country better?
Never quit. Team Never Quit Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Team Never Quit Podcast. Thank you all for listening, watching, viewing, and subscribing. If you haven't yet, go check out our podcast studio on YouTube or our social medias. Let us know what you think in the comments below. So before we get to our guest today, let's kick it off with our Patreon question of the day, which is, what is your favorite trap in the movie Home Alone?
Ooh.
Have both of y'all seen Home Alone?
Have you seen that?
Yes.
I've seen, but when I seen it, I didn't have, my English command was not really good, so I have understand what happened there.
It's a Christmas movie.
So if everyone hadn't seen it, we have to have a different question.
Okay, I think mine is when he's going down the stairs and he gets hit in the head with like a big iron thing and the spider falls on his face.
They got put on his face.
Yeah, I love the spider on his face. Like, his scream when the spider was put on his face is just awesome. Because that would terrify me.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, actually, it's one of our kids' favorite movies. Our son, our little guy. So they probably would be, like, screaming right now all kinds of options. I mean, I like that. I hate spiders.
Yeah.
Well, that scream was the best.
Yeah,
that
scream. Yeah.
That sucker throws out his face. I mean, everyone knows where that comes from.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those special movie moments. When you hear that sucker light up, you're like, I know exactly where that came from.
What's your favorite? You've seen the movie a million times.
It's a Christmas classic. You know, I mean, I have that jingle that happens every time. I love when the guy pulled the iron one, when he pulls the string on and the iron comes down the chute. Because that's a good one.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
That's logical.
It's hot.
He's freaking spikes him right there.
Yeah.
Oh, that kid had some skills for sure.
And didn't he, when he grabbed the doorknob?
Well, it was all heated up. What? Throwing that whole party. with not having an actual party in there was a great one. That's a defensive trick.
That was awesome. You know what I love that part.
That whole thing where
he's got a whole community set up.
Yeah,
whole
like community. A 10-year-old thinks to actually create a party as this trap. Hunter, what's yours? I've known you've seen it 10 billion times.
So we were kind of talking about this earlier. One part that I really love is whenever he tars and feathers him. That guy. Just because, I don't know, I think that's so funny to watch. It could actually happen. But also one thing that really stuck out to me is branding his hand with the doorknob with his McAllister M.
Yeah.
So now he's always taking a part of McAllister with him wherever he goes in his whole life.
Yeah.
So I think that's a pretty clever trick right there.
I love that. John, do you have one?
Yeah. I think my favorite one, I know we were talking earlier, and this one just came to me. The little talkback thing that he had, the little talk boy, when he recorded his uncle singing on that, and then the second Home Alone, and he was in the hotel and he played it back on the guy, and get out of here, you pervert.
That's a good point. The movie.
Yeah.
Angels with Filthy Souls was the name of that sucker, right? Yeah, when he played that one was good, too.
That's funny. Yeah, Home Alone's a great Christmas classic.
You remember it? You got one?
Well, I remember the spider scene, but then, you know, my daughter, she listened so quietly that I did fall asleep. But so I was like awakened by, Dad, you are sleeping. I was like, no, I'm concentrating. So I was woke up on that scene up there. So I remember the spider scene. I think this one my favorite one is.
Yeah.
Great movie, though.
Awesome. All right. Today we have on Drago Duran and his wife, Rachel. He was born and raised in Soviet-occupied Poland. After being sent to prison for his activism against the communist regime, he immigrated to the United States in 1984, where he eventually got his citizenship. After the Persian War broke out, he enlisted in the Navy SEAL teams and completed over 100 combat missions as an NSW lead breacher. During his time in the teams, Drago even developed a new breaching method and was eventually awarded a Bronze Star Medal, along with numerous other awards and decorations. And prior to his retirement, Drago also founded the Navy SEALs Fund to ensure that funds went to those in need when they needed it. Welcome to the show, Drago.
Thanks. Thank you. It's an honor to be here. Thank you. Thank you, Marcus, for inviting me.
Well, and you're welcome.
Rachel, as well.
And Mrs.
Yes. All right.
I can't believe we're sitting here. So when you were walking in here, I was thinking about the first time we ever met. Like, first time I ever laid eyes on you and hearing your story. So for those out there that don't know, he is a SEAL. Like, I did my first combat deployment with him. He's the real deal. There's a couple of guys out there, man, when you say their name, everybody in the community knows who he is. Matter of fact, I didn't even know your name till yesterday. Your real name, right? I mean, that's exaggeration. It's probably a few months ago or maybe years ago, but I didn't know. Like, we got guys in the teams, you'll do your whole careers, and we have nicknames and call signs. You don't even know that. But the fact that we're here now doing this on this side of it, just like we were talking earlier, is something. So, man, thank y'all for being here.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
The way we do it, man, is I want to introduce everybody to you. I know you got a book coming out and all the charities and foundations and everything that y'all are involved with. We're going to talk about that a little bit. Like I said, I'm just introducing y'all to the team. Mm-hmm. So the way we normally do it is just to back it up where you come from.
Yeah.
Well, I was, some people know, I was born in communist Poland. Well, communist, this is like people say communist country behind the Iron Curtain, communist. I just want to point out that none of these countries were ever communists, including Soviet Union. They were all socialist states run by communists, like hardcore communists, like my father, who was part of that evil system. So I grew up there, and eventually I spent time in communist prison. We call it gulags, the gulag actually is the prison system in Soviet Union, but because of the advisors, because of the Soviet military that actually advise Poland how to run this prison system, we in Poland call it gulags. You know, they were not per se technically gulags. They were prisons for political prisoners. So where I spent. And after prison time, I felt my life was in danger. I went to U.S. Embassy. I asked for help. And within a month, I believe, I had a visa to the United States. I came to the United States. 5 years later, I became U.S. citizen. And then since the when the war broke up, the first Persian Gulf War, I felt this is my moral obligation to support my country the best I can. I am American. I'm not Polish-American. I am not something American. There is not no hyphen in front of this American. So I say I need to go do something. And I think that I was not rich. I could not build the jobs for my fellow American citizens, but I could defend them. So I joined military. And my idea was to join during the wartime and then come back to my regular life. That was really good, and I got it made. I was having a really good life. So after war, I said, I will come back and resume my life. And I never came back from military. I spent 20 years as a Navy SEAL, and I retired in 2011. But it happens so much in between these things that that's like I could talk about it for days.
So back to, back it up to when, talk about being in a communist country, what that's like, and with this, or a socialist country with a communist ruler, and then coming over here and immediately trying to become a citizen. That gap in between. What was that like?
Well, real quick, in Poland, were you in a city? Were you in a major city, or yes, were you in like a suburb type?
I was in major city, although my family, my grandparents were from villages, from different two different villages. And so I cycled between the big, kind of little big city that was not that big. But then on the vacation, I was going to my grandparents. My father was very, very adamant, though, that if we go, we need to act like communists. We need to act like socialists, and that to be socialist means this, this, and this.
What does that mean?
Well, for my father, it was first to obey the government, to make sure that we don't say anything wrong about the government. So I was always advised, if you don't know what to say about socialism or communism, don't say anything. And if you do say it, always say it in the positive manner and prize it. If you don't, he said, basically, I could even lose my job. So you need to, you are responsible for being a good future communist.
Were
so,
his parents like that?
Oh, absolutely not. Actually, that's a funny thing. So whenever we go up there, I think I was like 3 or 4 years old. So my grandparent, my grandmother, his mother, was always teaching me how to pray. They were Catholics, they were Christians. So we get on our knees in front of our bed, put our hands together, and I couldn't do like this. I would be slapped. I'd say, you have to handle hands like this. And then she teach me pray, how to pray, what to pray for. And one of them was, God, please help us get all these communists and red evil and devils out of Poland. Please help us put them where they came from. And I pray like this. I didn't know any better. So, but then I said, Grandma, what the communists are? You say evil. Do they have like horns, tail? They breathe fire. She's like, well, worse than that. They don't show it, but they kill people. They imprison people for their beliefs. So Poland, and I didn't understand. I was 3 years old. She said, I still remember her words, Poland is not free. And we will not be free, and we will get rid of these people until they go where they came from. My father, this was one time overheard it. I remember the whole hell broke loose. How dare you teach my son this blasphemy of socialism and communism? They yelled at each other. My grandma cried, said, "Like I'm really ashamed of you. I mean, that's what you became. You sold yourself to devil, to evil. I should know better. I should grow you a better son. But look what became of you." So my father was very, very adamant. But so we are not allowed now. Then I was not allowed to pray with my grandmother alone. So from then on we had to pray, like, you know, to give health to my family, to everybody, but then quietly. And let's communists go away.
So explain, when we talk about communists, what does that look like? Is that one man at the top of it, and then a couple buddies underneath him, and then it showers down?
It appears like this because the unlimited power they have, eventually they grant themselves. And usually it is party. When at some point, then there were multiple parties in Poland, but they were all sidetracked through fraudulent elections, through false fake news media in Poland that were mostly consolidated under the Polish Communist Party. There's PZPR, I think they call themselves. In Polish, it was Polska Zjednoczona Partia Robotnicza. I don't know how to translate it.
No, you said it perfectly. I know. I got all that, actually.
So they were ruling the country. And the thing was that what people need to understand that even the one man is fronting it, he's very dependent on its base, and they can remove him anytime, or either by just make him resign, but most likely just make him die, and then the next one step in. And it happened in Poland, in any socialist state, that such crisis was coming every 4 or 5 years. And when the crisis came in, and I can talk about it a bit later, how it came in and what happened, but they usually remove that individual or make him die. And the next crew that came in were always saying, that was so common. They're like, the first thing they say is, they perverted socialism, but we know how to fix it.
So every time someone dies or gets old or retires, y'all have to go through the same cycle over and over again.
Well, they die or go through that cycle because people revolt. And now they need to save the face, they need to save the system. So what they do, the first thing that they say is, well, that crew, this prime minister or whatever, this the first secretary of the Communist Party made gross errors in implementing socialism. So he's going to be removed, but we know how to fix it. We know how socialism should work. So we will implement the socialism the right way. And that cycle repeats itself every 4 or 6 years whenever the crisis arises. And the crisis arises because people wanted bread. They wanted freedom. They were suppressed. They were beaten up sometimes for disagreeing with the government. And we'll talk a little bit more later about the mechanisms, how they terrorize society. But this is when the crisis arises because people had enough of it. They wanted food. This is when there was a typical socialist trick. You say, well, we're going to change you now. If you're inconvenient, we can kill you, we will, so you don't cause any problems. But otherwise, we're going to remove you, and the next crew come in, and we will fix what they messed up. So they were bad. They were good until the revolt started. So they removed them, say, they were bad, we're going to fix it. So people, for first couple times, say, okay, maybe let's see what happened. And the cycle repeated itself every 4 or 5 years, where people were finally had enough, being hungry, starving. They raised up, and the next crew come in and say, they were bad. We're going to fix the socialism. We show you how to implement the real socialism. And they basically recycle himself, removing the guys who already were unpopular in Polish society, either by killing them or by quietly removing them in the retirement somewhere.
So pre-World War II, was it ever like a free capitalist country?
It was a free capitalist country. Poland was actually, in pre-war Poland had one of the strongest navy on the Baltic Sea. They had five submarines. Two of them were the newest, one of the best submarines in the world. And the Poles were very adamant about rebuilding Poland, about making it as strong as possible. Of course, Poland didn't have the resources like the neighboring countries had. The Soviet Union and Germany, and also Poland was torn up. Poland didn't exist before the First World War because it was taken apart by the neighboring countries. So when Poland was reborn, the first thing they had to do, they had to fight Soviet Union, the Bolshevik Russia. The Bolsheviks came almost up to Warsaw when they were repelled. But matter of fact, this is where a few Americans stepped in and actually make that happen. They built the Polish Air Force. People don't know about it. And even today, the signs were by one of the Polish squadron has American flag in it. communists never admitted to it. They never wanted to people to know, and I didn't know it until I was until socialism fell and this truth became available. But American flag was carried in the bowel by Poles at the beginning of the Second World War. So there was a squadron, famous squadron 303, who was the highest scoring squadron in Battle of Britain. That its symbol incorporates American flag, the red stripes and stars, red blue colors and stars. And you can see it if you look up anything about the Squadron 303, the most effective squadron of Battle of Britain. So that insignia existed, were carried in the battle in 1939.
Oh, interesting.
How old were you when you came over?
I was 24.
How'd you get over here?
Well, after prison time, I didn't have much.
I know how tough you are. Did you tunnel all the way to here? I wouldn't put it past your ass, bro. I know.
People ask me, swim? How'd you get here?
I said, well, if it swam his whole way, I ain't kidding.
That's easier for me to answer was the ship, because it's an easier way to say it for me, but I didn't say it right. So how did you come to America? On the ship. Ship. How did you get on the ship? Well, ship on the water. So you rode the ship through the ocean. I said, yes. Well, you're talking ship. Yes. I know, for me, it's hard to
That's
hear
how tough
difference.
He was. He rode a damn sheep all the way over here. No one else has done that. I never even heard
Can
that
we
before.
Talk about why you ended up in prison?
Yes. So one of those crises, like I described earlier, like every 4 or 5 years, the socialism has these upheavals because people eventually get so tired and they're too hungry to put up with it, so they revolt.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
In 1979, John Paul II came to Poland to visit. Actually, this is a funny story too about that. I'll expand on it a little bit later. So he was preaching to Poles, look, you are hungry. I know you are tired and you want freedom. You need to step up and fight for it. You don't let people discourage you. Don't let people say that this is the way it's supposed to be. This is not. You need to fight for your freedom. And people raised up. People started organizing. It was 1979, I remember. And as people start organizing, my parents, my mother noticed that the government is starting passing the laws, kind of strange laws, basically allowing them to legally, because they used to kill people and arrest people all the time, but it was like on the side of the law in the shadows. So now they could do it legally. And if people were asking, why do you do that? The answer always was, well, it's just in case if there is a foreign power attacking Poland or if there's something, we need to have some means to defend ourselves. And this is that these things will never be used in Poland. They never, these rules and those laws will never be used against Polish people. Well, until 1921, when they imposed martial law and arrested from 25 to 60,000 people in one night, but that's later. So, So they this is how people start organizing themselves and eventually created the first independent from Communist Party organization that was totally independent, normal, not fraudulent, but normal elections. To the, they call it trade unions. This is that this guy was for organization who was able to oppose the communist and socialist atrocities and slavery. So before they imposed the martial law, people start organizing themselves. They eventually they built and they approved the communists. Had no choice. There was 80% people within these organizations wanting that. So they organize this, they call it Solidarity, the trade union Solidarity. So that was the first independent from Communist Party organization in the entire Warsaw Pact. So you can imagine the fear in Moscow now. So Poland is falling out of the socialist bloc. That's what the panic was there. So communists decide eventually in 1991, when they approved that trade union, there was only rules to buy the time. By this time, they were making lists of people to arrest. So there was not like random arrest when it happened on December 13th. They just ran up and just found 25,000 people to put in jails, in prisons. That was very deliberate, that process. While they were approving that trade union, while they were making amicable movements towards the Polish society, they were already planning to overthrow it and destroy it. So in 1981, December 13, at midnight, all communications in Poland ceased. The phone stopped working, TV, radio was shut down. There was no communications. The towns being circled down by the military, isolated. You couldn't move from town to town. Eventually, up past midnight, the military moved into towns, and with the secret police, they start raiding the homes of people on the list and arresting them. The estimates are different. I mean, nobody knows even today, but they vary from 6,000 people to 60,000 people in one night. I tend to believe it is somewhere in between around 40,000 people were arrested. And we already had a taste of freedom from Solidarity, taste of freedom from socialism. So a lot of people start building organizations, and including myself, me and my friends, people from the trade union, who say, right, we need to do something. The only thing we can do right now is print the newspapers with the real facts, what happened, who was arrested, where these people are now, because nobody knew. They would just disappear from the homes, from the families who were trying to find them. They didn't even know where people were. So this is how it started, and we start building the different organizations. I was in one of them. We were printing newspapers, basically facts about martial law, why it was illegal, who was arrested, where these people could be, what could happen to them. And it didn't take long. I didn't know any better. I was not a conspiracist, or I was just a normal kid at the time, but the freedom spoke to me. I wanted to be free. I didn't want this. And we can talk later about what the communist socialism did to society and how they operated, but I didn't want this anymore. So as we built it, eventually we got arrested. That was not very difficult because we didn't know how to do it. There was not like a very elaborate organization. We just printed out and disseminated to people, so that didn't take long. So this is how I ended up in prison. My sentence was 3 years of prison for creating, distributing anti-socialist propaganda, and I was accused of trying to overthrow socialist government, including it by force. I was arrested and then spent time in prison. Actually, that's funny because that prison time for me was education. There was a huge education about Polish history, because the funny thing is that when they put together the political prisoners in those prisons, they were not just people like me. They were scientists, they were professors, philosophers, physicists, historians. This is where my eyes really opened. This is where I start learning this stuff. I'd never heard about it. I never know that even such monuments exist before they were destroyed by communists, because it was before my time. They were raising everything out that was not aligned with socialist ideology. So I didn't know about it. So when I started learning about it, as a good God, that was so. And I was single at the time. I was just a kid. Didn't have anybody outside but my mom. So I was not bothered by that prison as much as I was learning. So when I came out from prison, I think that then I became dangerous to socialist state, because I knew the history. I knew what they were really doing. So yeah, we call those prisons gulags, but they technically they were not. I need to make sure that people understand. We call them gulags because they operate the same way, the similar way the Soviet Union prison system operated. There were people, the prison's officials and administration was advised by Russian generals and colonels and Russians embedded within the Polish government.
What did your dad think about you getting arrested?
I didn't talk to my dad since he left when I was 7 years old. I refused. I would like to go a bit later, because we didn't talk to him. The only thing, he came to prison one time, and I remember I didn't want to meet with him. I met with him before he died, when I went to Poland. And we knew that he doesn't have much time left. So I kind of, just to ease him out, I visited him, actually me and my wife with Rachel. I went there and we talked for a while. But as Rachel knows and heard, he was unrepentant. He was still that ardent communist who was in despair because his socialist ideas were not implemented, they failed. He did not like it. His idea was always that if we cannot convince you to like socialism, we get rid of you. And we get rid of you by any means. So we will cancel you, you stop existing in Polish society, and they did. We can talk about it later. I would like to mention about the techniques used by the socialist state. And if that doesn't help, we'll just imprison you on the false charges. If that doesn't work, you just disappear. And that happened. So that was my father's idea of implementing socialism. He believed that we need to convince people to socialism because it offers such a great things. But if we can't, we have the power now, since the socialist state, we have the power to eliminate these people. We call them enemies of the state because they do not subscribe to the values that I want people to subscribe. He was very adamant about it. But if you look at him, and like when Rachel met him, he was a gentleman. He was a very nice person. He was somebody you would meet. You say, I wish I had a grandpa like this, or I wish he was my neighbor. This guy was well-educated. He was a philologist. He was a professor, and he was working for the communist government. He sold his soul to government, and we can talk about it later too. I was exposed to his ideas when I lived with him for a year, I think a year and a half, until he got tired of me, kicking me right back. So, so yeah.
Wow.
Okay, so when you got out, how much time passed before you came over here?
Well, the first time I tried to build my life there, but what happened is I was doing kickboxing at the time and taekwondo, so, and that's another story too, but we can come back to it later. So I, very often, like we're working out at night, around from 7 to 8 to 10 o'clock for 2-3 hours a day. And there was nothing unusual. I was working with our guys on the street, and there's the two cars pulling civilian cars. The guys jump out of it with the badges, say, okay, we're secret police, you go with us. They just handcuff me, throw in the car. Our guys, like, they knew already what happened. I mean, they knew who I was, so they were not surprised, my taekwondo kickboxing buddies. So they drove me from till 2-3 o'clock in the morning around the town, out of town, in the woods somewhere we drove. It's pretty scary at times. And I started worrying that one of these trips, I will not come back. And they were not squeamish about it too, because every time I ask, where are we going? Well, when we get there, it won't matter to you anymore. So I was like, wow. And so usually they throw me up on the outskirts of the town, city, like 2-3 o'clock in the morning, that There was no buses, no, I didn't have a car anyway, but I always used the buses or trolleys. Nothing was working, and so I had to walk home for a few miles. I got really scared, so that's why I decided it's time to leave. I mean, that's sooner or later, it will not end up well. And I went to U.S. Embassy. I asked for help.
Is that how it worked? How'd you get over? Did you just walk up to one of the embassies?
Or? Yeah, I just walked up to the embassy. And, of course, the embassy, you know, that was under heavy surveillance.
Yeah.
And but I didn't care. I mean, what else can they don't know about me that I, that besides, you know, I'm opposing socialism because I've seen it, I experienced it, and I've seen the people who are dead today because they oppose socialism. So I went to U.S. Embassy, I went straight in. I introduced myself, I told them who I am and why I'm here. So, and I was not the only one. At that time, there was a lot of people like me asking for help. So they say, yeah, please bring us this and these documents. We went up there, so I went collect all the documents that I had, my courts. Actually, my court is my court proceedings and my whole case is public on the Polish government side right now, since I was fully exonerated by after socialism fell by the legitimate Polish government. So they once I collect all the documents, they say, okay, you're gonna have a document as a promise to receive the immigration visa to the United States. Now you need to go to Polish government and ask for passport, because in Poland you couldn't have a passport. Only people who socialist government trusted could have a passport. And they were also not kept at home. Once you get a passport, use it, you come back, you return it to the government. So you didn't have a passport. So I went with these documents to the Polish office, and I told them what I'm doing, why. So they say, okay, so this is the procedure now. You have to first go to military, say that they are not, and police, that you are not being sought after, that nobody, that you are, they don't need you, they don't want you. You are not wanted man. Okay, so you need to go, we need to have see that you are not wanted man. I remember I went to military, because in Poland, military service was compulsory at the time. It was draft, and Poland was small, and the surveillance of the government was so pervasive that you couldn't hide. You couldn't skip that. You either go to jail or to join military. So I went up there, and I told them, this is the document that I have. I'm leaving Poland. I need that document from you, from recruiting office, that I am not being wanted man, and that I can leave. I still remember this guy, this major, whoever it was. He just sits up there in the desk, just looks at me. You can tell he disgust on his face. Then he looks at the eagle, the Polish symbol at the time, and say, people like you, young people, should serve until this Polish eagle up there, not seeking outside escape Poland. I got really mad. I said, that eagle of yours is not even Polish, because Bolsheviks, you see this eagle up there? He's missing a crown. The Bolsheviks stole the crown and took it to Siberia. Matter of fact, they actually kidnapped entire Polish eagle and ferried on Siberia. What you have is a fake Polish eagle. But I wouldn't want to be in your shoes or shoes any of your Bolshevik lackeys when this Polish eagle can come back. Oh, God. The guy said, he was yelling, screaming, stomping, spitting out of his mouth. But he had absolutely no choice. He had to sign it, because that's the way it worked at the time. So he signed it. When I left this office, I was walking on the street. I still could hear him screaming and cussing me up there.
Oh, my gosh.
But, yeah, I just couldn't help myself. That was not Polish eagle. That was eagle because crown, any royal symbols offended Bolsheviks and communists, socialists. So everything in Poland was immediately removed. That eagle was just creation of socialists and communists who just, okay, let's make an eagle that doesn't offend communists and socialists. So they created one like this, and it was not Polish eagle. Polish eagle returned, and these Bolsheviks eventually got, even today, they are still prosecuting some of these people implementing socialism in Poland for atrocities, and especially the judges. Even today, there are cases pending, and they call it extrajudicial murders. Because the judges were sentencing some people to death in post-Second World era. So, and on either fake charges or just for opposing socialism. So these people are even today, that today now when Poland is free, some of them are being still sought out, people who seek out them, the government, and also they are being prosecuted.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
When you get the asylum, do they give you money to get a plane ticket and to come over?
The United States did.
The United States does.
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, the organizations within the United States, it was very well organized.
Was that a hard thing? Was it a hard process to go through?
No. Basically, the only hard process was, the only hardship was caused by socialists in Poland. Because they require me to buy like $10 or $15. In Poland, dollars were illegal. You couldn't have dollars. You could have a bond.
Bonds.
Yeah. So you buy from Polish government something that was supposed to be a dollar, but the Polish government controlled that. But I needed real dollars, so they were like twice as expensive. And that $15 at the time was like a month and a half or 2 months of my paycheck. I didn't have that money. I had to borrow. So I borrowed, I purchased these dollars. And then I was provided with a ticket to the United States, actually to Germany first, to the like a place where we can kind of learn a little bit more about America, where we can wait for assignment where we will go. So I flew to Germany first. There were already people from, I think, State Department and some of the Poles working for State Department waiting for us, because I was not the only one. And they drove us to the hotel where we spent next, I think, month or 2 months just learning about America. There was not enough time to learn English. I didn't speak English at the time. But I was so fascinated. There was like, you know, they basically were telling us about life in America, about the things you need to do, you ought to do, how to be good citizen, and they were very stern about it, that you do not have to be citizen to live in America. This is your choice. It was so unreal, you know. They didn't ask us for anything. They just come and live, be free, live as a free man, and. Yeah, that's what I asked myself, told myself. Yes, I will become U.S. citizen. I'll be the best U.S. citizen America can have.
Hmm.
So that was my promise.
Awesome. So where'd you come in at?
I came on the on the airplane. So I came on the airplane and we landed in New York. I came to Memphis.
Came in through New York?
Yeah.
Statue of Liberty, yeah, the way you're supposed to write, the cool way.
Yeah. So we flew, and then there were people already. The funny thing is, too, in Germany, when they were teaching us about America.
Was that on an army base?
No. It was in the hotel in Germany.
Okay.
It was just like a nice small town, and it was very relaxing. It was very quiet. And so we were provided with everything, with food, with a place to stay. And that only what they asked us to learn about America. So we did, and that was I didn't know any English. I had no money. The $15 that I had, I just went and bought myself my dream of my life, a little tape recorder so I can listen to the music. It was like so small for me at that time. It was like maybe that big. And I was like, God, I am so rich right now. I'm so man, you know. I have it. And They ask us too, like, where would you prefer? Do you have any preferences as coming to the United States where you would like to settle down? You know, I was always cold in Poland because we didn't have good clothes. or we couldn't afford good clothes. So I only asked, like, if you can, if possible, if I can go to a place where it's always hot, I just don't want to be cold anymore.
We got places like that here.
Yes. Here. So they wrote it down and they say, what do you think about, like, later on, like, before my departure, maybe like 2 weeks, say, what do you think about Memphis, Tennessee? I say, I don't know where the Memphis is. I don't know what Memphis is, but I know that Elvis Presley is from Tennessee.
The king lives there.
Yeah. But is it hot up there? I say, yeah, is this very hot? I say, right on, sign me up. And this is how I end up in Memphis, Tennessee. So, yeah, I came in with a bag of clothes. By the time I spent this $15, so I had only 10 Phoenix, German Phoenix. This is like less than 10 cents. That's all I had in my pocket.
So when you wound up, what was the first thing you did? Go get a job, find a place to live?
No, first what I did was, because there were people from the church already waiting for me. Sure. They took me out.
That's who got you first, was the church?
Yes. Yeah. They helped me find an apartment, but in the meantime, they put me with like elderly couple from the church. So you just wait here, you know, we kind of like relax and we find apartment and some job for you or help you find it. So I stayed there for a few days and I remember in Poland, this was so unreal. So these older couple say, okay, well, you know, we are retired here, but I'm still working, helping here, I'm busy here. So in the daytime, you will be by yourself. So this is the fridge, you can get yourself food and stuff. In Poland, it was like, you don't go to somebody's fridge and pull things out. So I was like, they left. So what do? I'm starving, I'm hungry, but I just cannot go to this fridge. I would have to ask. But so I kind of first 2 days, I didn't eat until they came back, but they noticed that. So didn't you eat anything? I was like, through Polish people, other
they
Polish
spoke
people.
Your language then, right?
No. I had a translator at the time.
Okay, check.
So the other Polish people, they came and say, no, you need to go start eating. This is different in America. If you are invited and they tell you that food is there and please help yourself, you just do that. I just couldn't bring myself. It was, I think I don't want to be impolite and just go and raid their fridge. But this is what I thought about. So I started eating. But they also, they had the time in the morning. So they lived on the outskirts of Memphis. They told me, like, well, you know, if you feel like walking around the neighborhood to see how people live in America, you are welcome. So first thing I did is like, well, neighborhood is nice, but it's the same. So, but I want to see those stores. I want to see these tape recorders, the cameras, the toys, all that cool stuff in America. So it has got to be in downtown. In Poland, you go to downtown to see all this. You walk on the the sidewalk, and all these sides in these buildings are those nice stores. So I say, I'm going to go to downtown. I didn't know how far it was. I just see the far away, the buildings. So I put my flip-flops on, and I'm just walking like, where is the sidewalk? No sidewalk. So I'm just skirting, dodging the cars, trying to get to this. It was like maybe 4 or 5 miles in flip-flops. Yeah, I made to the downtown, and I looked like big, powerful buildings. But there's no stores. There's nothing, no those windows to look at anything. There's a bunch of restaurants, which I didn't have the money to buy anything. So I kind of disappointed and say, well, how are people buying this cool stuff? There's nothing here, you know, where they find it. I didn't know anything about malls.
Yeah.
So then I'm flopping back, flip-flop. It's so unusual in America to see people on the street, and people are so attentive to it. You know, this is what I'm saying. America is built on goodness. This was to the point, like, when you do something good for other people, you don't dwell on it. It's just like, well, this is the right thing to do. It's just like, do it and help. But this is not normal anywhere around the world. This is only in America that this is so ingrained in America life that people don't pay attention. They just do it and don't dwell on it. That's so transparent. Why do you want? I do it because it's the right thing to do, mm-hmm. And that's why. So when I was flip flopping back up there on these flip flops, people were stopping. You need some help. What do you? What happened? Do you need a ride? I was like, no, I don't know who you are. I'm just like, no, thank you. I walk. So I was walking through interstates a little bit here, just crossing the interstate because I didn't know any better in Poland. Everywhere you walk, people don't have a car. Most of the people didn't have a car at the time. So I just keep walking, crossing interstate. There was no sidewalk. We just walk on the street or walk whatever I could to make my way back. But then when I told, it's like, don't ever do it. It's okay, we'll take you for a ride. And, so this is it was my first days in Memphis, Tennessee. And also they took me for a ride. But the same before, they bought me a little dictionary. I still have this dictionary to this day. So they drove me around, said, okay, this is the residential area, this is the business area, this is the mall that will take you so you can see, you can walk. All I see was like a huge building. So I say, good God, who lives in that? And that's a big apartment. That was a mall, that was not an apartment. So they, as we drove, I just...
Somebody's closet.
Somebody's closet. So as we drove around, you know, the dictionary that they gave me, I'm looking, I try to impress them too, that I'm trying want to learn English. So like, this is, I'm looking, tree. Yeah, you know, this is tree. So we're going, then this is woman. Yeah, you know, you get good. So we're going through my name, and I see the, you know, black guy walking on the street. So I'm looking very quick and say, this is the ugly word. That's I have it till this day in dictionary. They almost wrecked the car. It was like, God! I didn't understand what they were saying, but she was like, I know she was very upset. They both were very upset. So they, and I showed like, I don't know what it is, but like, mm-hmm. The dictionary you gave me, she looked at this, oh my, give me a pen. So she scratched this thing and say, black man, and say, repeat, black man. Say, black man. So this is black man. Yeah, this is good.
Oh my gosh.
But you know, this is the pitfalls that people get into that I got a lot with English. I was learning it. I'm still learning. Mm-hmm. But I'm still learning. But at that time was very difficult for me. So yeah, after this incident, I usually like, before I even say something, I was like, okay. Yeah, okay. So I used that word.
How long did it take you before you started picking it up pretty good?
I think maybe a month or two when I started finally understanding cartoons. Because what I was doing, you know, I went to work. Like maybe a week and a half later, they got me an apartment. And they gave me a job in school. So I was janitor. And I started, when I was, you know, mapping, I said from newspapers, I cut out these cartoons. What do you call it, cartoons?
Yeah.
No, And I was like, Jane likes Joe. Okay, so just Jane likes Joe. It means that Jane, Luby, Joe. Now just translating in Polish. And let's keep going and keep going. And eventually I started picking up. I was watching TV and I couldn't understand the word, what was being said. So by watching cartoons, you know, it was easier for me to understand.
Sure.
Basically, I learned English, at least initially, from watching cartoons and reading the newspaper cartoons and having a dictionary in the back pocket. I tried to remember, I told myself, at least 10 words a day. So I was just like, select like 10 most popular words, and then I was just like hammering in my head.
I don't know why they don't do that in school. Like when they try to teach you a foreign language in school, just sit us down like we teach every other kid. Look at some cartoons and it helps. With us, the first day you're in there learning how to conjugate a verb. In a sentence. Like, and you don't even know how to do that regularly till you're 10 or 11. Yeah. What are you even talking about? So that's why no one ever picks the language up in school.
Yeah, but I think I had more formal education before. I just couldn't afford it and I was busy trying to make my living. I didn't really care much about the grammar at the time, so they will come. But the way I learned English was with a lot of grammar errors, and it still haunts me sometimes. Because, you know, once you learn one certain way, it's easier to learn the right way than relearn.
That's true. I don't know what that is, but everyone who doesn't speak English and is not from America, when they come over, they don't care. They'll butcher some English. They'll throw it out. They don't care. Everyone's great at that, except for Americans. Like, we'll learn a couple of words in a foreign language, and we will not throw it out there. I guess because if it's embarrassing or something. But everyone else, they don't care.
Well, you have a choice because, you know, English is so popular. You don't really need to learn a different language. If you don't remember, you supplement yourself with English words. People will understand, and you don't want to look bad, you know. But I had no choice. So, you know, basically my English was like, I is what I is, you know, I be what I be.
Sure, yeah, exactly. That's the best, is picking up the term. When you hear that, you're like, oh, I heard that.
Yeah, but the more I listen, the more I learn, the better I get. I still get sometimes chastised by you, Rachel, if I use the wrong
words. He just likes to add a lot of extra A and the... kind of all throughout the sentence.
Yeah. Oh, the don't even get me started on this the and this F. I think I've mentioned about it before, right?
Because we got words where the letters don't even mean anything. They're like, yeah, that's the best part.
Or use F instead of that. Yeah, okay.
Especially F when you get fired up. Like when he gets fired up, yeah. that's when it starts flowing together. You can't understand a word he's saying.
Well, that's where if he's on the phone with someone, they'll tell him to hand the phone to me.
Sometimes still do. So funny. You know, once I left the teams, my English kind of went south because I'm sitting at the computer. I'm a software engineer now, so I work at the computer and I don't talk to people. In teams, you have to talk. There's nothing elaborate, but at least I was proficient with it. Mm-hmm. And now we just have to, like, sometimes, like, people look at me that, yeah, and then...
What okay. did he say?
Especially in our vocabulary, because guys will say something to each other that has nothing to do with the situation. But yeah. It's from some movie or some book or something.
Yeah,
you got to go back and forth with that. And that's the wit that comes with being in our fraternity. Yeah.
Besides, in the teams, you know, the language is somewhat different, too. The slangs that we sometimes use. Ugh. I got so used to it that I really had to relearn English. And she actually, Rachel helped me with this because you cannot use these words.
I'll give you people some bad habits. Understand. Sure, sure. Yeah. We got that for sure.
What did you ever stay in touch with the elderly couple that brought you in?
No. After I joined the Navy, all my contacts broke, and I didn't have contacts with anybody there. I left Memphis, and I never came back to Memphis.
How long before you came in to when you left?
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
How long
were you here before you joined the Navy?
6 years until I became U.S. citizen.
That's how long it took?
That was not that easy at the time. At that time, you had to pass the test. You had to learn about United States history. You have to wait 5 years first.
That's right.
Then you have to get all these materials. You can prepare yourself. Again, you don't have to do it. You can live in the United States without being a citizen. But I wanted to be American. So I did that. It took me a while because I wanted to be good American. I wanted to know about America. So this is something that... I had to study at the time, prepare myself, I polish my English too, so the examining officer will understand me. And actually, I think I impressed him, you know. And there is a video of me. This is funny because I have that video from TV channel. Because when we went to the ceremony of becoming Americans, the TV was there and they video it. So they interview what I feel about it, you know, how do I feel now? So I was so excited. I was talking. And the comments, well, some people, and the comment from that on the TV is like, well, some people, my English may not be that great and understandable, but they have so much enthusiasm and so much, they are so in love. And I have that video. It's actually, that comment is so funny. Now we are laughing at it. I got the tape from them. At the time.
We actually were driving back from somewhere with the family and drove by the first apartments he lived in Memphis.
Oh, wow. Oh.
It was...
Well, there was a project. I didn't know anything project. That thing looked better than my neighborhoods, you know, in Poland. And I'll show you some of the pictures from Poland, from the Polish, actually in my book, that there are some from the neighborhoods. So I didn't know much what the project is. For me, there was just the housing with a lot of people milling around. the place they placed me was a lot of actually immigrants. There was like one two-story building with the balcony going all the way around, and each apartment was like the doors to apartment, more like a hotel today. You would say some of those less expensive hotels. So, but I was living with a bunch of Cambodians, Vietnamese, which I had so much respect for these people, how hard they work, Vietnamese. And at that time it was bustling with Rife, but I didn't know that that Rife was just a prostitution and drugs at the time. But for me, it was just a people walking around, you know. So when we went up there, everything is boarded now. There's grounds all over. There's just...
Condemned.
Yeah. One building.
There's still police pretty active.
Yeah, police pretty active because it's still a bad part of town, but... Yeah. You know, this is how I started. I was so proud of it. You know, say when I got this apartment, I couldn't contain myself with these people who brought me there to live, so I can call my mom and say, "Mom, I have an apartment." You know, in Poland, apartment has a little bit different meaning. It's more like an apartment is, at the time was to have something great, like great place to live that very few Poles ever experienced. So I say, by the way, there was Americans in the making. So I say, "Mom, I have an apartment. Apartment, that must be expensive." She says, like, "Not only that, I have a fridge, refrigerator." So, "Oh my God." "And I have a climatizations." She say, "Oh, how much do you pay for this? This is, you really can afford this? Can you have it?" I say, "Yes, I can pay myself for it. And check this out. You remember these boxes in the windows we thought people keep food in it?" Huh. "They are not boxes for food. They are... this is machine that makes your house cool." Because, you know, when I was growing up, I was watching movies, American movies. I see these boxes in the windows. My mom always kept the milk and other stuff on the ledge outside the window because in Poland it's cold. So it was like a natural fridge for us. But sometimes things fell off the fridge, especially in the strong wind. So I say, Americans are so, I always think, like, Americans are so smart. Why in Poland can't just make simple box put outside the window? We can keep their food up there and everything without risking killing somebody with it. So then when I came to America, of course, I realized this is not... they are not food boxes, they are air conditioning. So,
Oh my gosh.
That's my first impression. That's so funny. Yeah.
So when you did join the Navy, did you know what the SEAL teams were?
At that time, not really. The way I joined military was, when the war broke up, I said, okay, that's what I'm going to do. I say earlier, I was not rich to build jobs. And my goal was always to be good American, be good citizen. What can I do to make our country better? But, you know, being poor guy, I was not really that poor at that time, but I didn't have a means or know-how how to build jobs for fellow Americans, how to be helpful, but I think I can fight for them. So I say, I'm going to go. The war broke out. That's my moral obligation to join the effort. I go sign up. I didn't know how to go about it. So I've seen on the post office those cards. Selective services.
When you turn 18.
To register yourself. So I just filled this up. I sent it off, went back to my apartment and I was living with other skydivers by the time. And I start packing my stuff. I say, "What are you doing, Drago?" Oh, they call me Geronimo at the time. So, "What are you doing, Geronimo?" I was like, "Well, I'm going to war." "You're going to war? What war?" I said, "Well, Iraq, Kuwait." They say, "Well, wait a minute. How did you do it?" I say, "I just sent them the postcard. So I'm just waiting for the call."
Postcard.
Yeah. You know, so I
that's what it was, right? The postcard.
I thought that's how you join. You know. So, well, they say, "No, that's not how you do it. That's not how you do it. That's we need to, well, let's see what happened." Like a month later, came in, "Well, thank you for your effort, but you are too old. You are like 30 years old and you are out of the range. But anyway, thank you." So I was kind of like, well, I guess that's not how it works. So then with the advice of my fellow skydiver, I went to Army recruiting office. And then they say, okay.
In Memphis?
In Memphis, yes. Yeah. So they say, "Okay, what do you want to do?" I say, "I want to go to war." "Okay, is any place you want to serve or like any unit? Do you have any preferences?" I said, "I don't know. I just want to go. Send me whatever America needs me." Say, "Okay." So they started filling paperwork. It took, I think, a few months before we complete most of it. And then the Leapfrogs showed up in Memphis. Mm. So they went to our drops and we skydived together, the SEALs. And I thought, those are cool guys and they are so good in the air, you know, they are really good. So it was really enjoyable. And I told them that I'm about to join Army and so and so. I was like, wait a minute, why don't you go and talk to your recruiter, but go to Navy recruiter and tell them that you want to be Navy SEAL. That's why I want the Navy SEALs. We are. I say, holy shit, I can do it all the whole life.
Did you even know what a SEAL was back then? No one did, really, back then. That's the 80s, right?
Yeah,
excuse me, 90, early 90s, right?
Yeah. Yeah, those like, yeah, those was 90s, yeah. So then, so I went to Army recruiting, to Navy recruiting office and say, look, I want to join Navy and I want to be a SEAL. That's like, ooh. Okay. So, but how old are you? 30. Okay. So we can start paperwork now. I said, well, I already have completed paperwork with Army office up there. Maybe you guys can go and get it and stuff. Like, okay, you need to go up there and get it. So I was like, damn, how do I was, it was so awkward for me. You know, these guys did all these words, all these interviews and everything. I was pretty much ready to go. And then I have to go tell them that I'm going next door. So that didn't work good. So I went up there and grabbed the, but I did it. And I brought them the papers and they looked, so yeah, you are too old, but I tell you this, as a recruiter told me, you sign this right here, and I guarantee they will make you a Navy SEAL. Oh, you just need to sign it, go up there, and they will make you a SEAL.
Well, that guy's a salesman, wasn't he?
Well, I was a poor buyer.
I signed this piece of paper right here. He's like, there's nothing on it. There will be. Don't worry. Just put your sign right there.
But at least they were nice to me. Say, like, look, so...
freaking listen paper is one page.
So they say, okay, so this is what's going to happen. You're going to go to boot camp, and then you will have, even if you, so when before they make you a SEAL, you will have to get a job in the Navy. At that time, you remember, there was SEAL rating. There was just, you became...
that way, if you didn't make it, they'd send you somewhere. Yeah. Yeah,
at least that was nice to me that say, okay, well, you don't need a job. You just go undesignated and then try and hope that you will make it. They will say, I will give you a job. So what job do you want? I said, like, something with skydiving, maybe parachutes. Parachute rigger. Oh, yeah, parachute rigger. I didn't know what it was, but I thought this was like, maybe parachute rigger, I'm definitely I have to jump.
Yeah.
Right?
It's well, that, a great job. Like, yeah. It's a great job.
They, well, great job, but the rate was so filled up that I couldn't advance. Oh, yeah. I was like forever E5.
That's how you know it's a great job. It fills up. You can't get in there.
Yeah. So then I started learning and, to boot camp. When I went, they had this funny thing because when they got the paperwork and when we selected the parachute rigging school, he looked in his manual and say, well, it's like kind of like a little bit with concern, say, but you know, like this, if you don't go to the school, we need to time your boot camp. So after boot camp, you go to school. If you wait longer, then you have to wait like 4 or 5 months to do that because for the next school, or you can join next week. And you can leave next week. I was like, sure. I had a girlfriend at the time, so I signed the paperwork on, I think, on Monday. So I was told to come back on Thursday to be sworn in a delay entry program because my paper was already completed because that school started like the right after the boot camp. I called my girlfriend and said, hey, we need to get married. I'm leaving. I'm joining the Navy. It's like, what? On the other side of the phone. So I said, yeah, you know, I'm for me to join to get the job, I have to join next week. I have to leave next week.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Thanks God, she said yes at the time. So we ran up very quick to Memphis downtown. We found the judge. We just got like, I don't think we had the rings even at the time yet. And he just blessed us, Dominus, Dominus, we are a married couple now, and we signed the paperwork and stuff, we are married. So then we ran up, got the rings, and then I went on Thursday, got in the delay entry program, and I believe Saturday I left to Chicago, and rest of the history. But in the boot camp, I was so I was so proud. At first, I was scared because there was everybody was yelling at me, screaming. I can't understand only half of it, what they said. So, but I was working so hard that I end up as a top recruit from all the graduating batch. I get the Military Excellence Award, and I was the number one. I was like put up in front of the whole graduation group.
Aww.
So that
was, feel good.
That feel really good. Yes, I was so proud of myself. And there was a story too in the boot camp. I got the kidney stone at the time too. So they, I need to come back to this for a second. So I was laying in the bed like at night. I was in the bunk upstairs, and then just something like somebody punched me in the back, almost like the cops, the police. not police, but the prison guards, when they beat me, I'm in prison with the kidneys. So I thought maybe they did some damage to it because that was just my kidney just went out. I fell off the bed and I was on my fours in like within 5 minutes. There's like a big puddle of sweat on it because it was so painful. I had no idea what it was. The class from my company, they called the corpsman, they came in. Are you okay? Are you okay? I said, do I look okay to you? I mean, I was like only pain. Say, no, you don't. Okay. So I had the kidney stones. They put in the documents. So I graduate from the boot camp as number one, went to A school. I graduate from A school as one of the top students from PR school. And this is where the problem started too, because like once I didn't know how to swim very well. I did practice a little bit, and we started with, there's another friend of mine who went with me, Jason, you know who you are. So we tried to practice it, but I could swim only without mask and on one side. We didn't know very well how to do the side stroke, neither Jason nor I. So we just practiced the best we could. So, but anyway, I made through the test, and so they when they look it up, before I went to A school, the final, once I passed the, initially I passed the test for Navy SEALs, my ASVAB was high enough, so we went through medical check. And medical check, the doctor looks at it and say, well, you just got a kidney stone. You have to wait, I think, 2 years. So I'm going to decline. You cannot go into training after 2 years. So no worry, you just go and, you know, you go to your profession, your job, and then you will apply again. You know, for me at the time, that to be a SEAL was not the most important thing. I just wanted to serve. So yeah. For me, I was like, oh, sure, okay. I mean, I understand, and that's fine. I'm still going to war, right? Say, so, yeah, I still go to war. Okay, perfect. So in the A school, finally, I'm just thinking like, well, why don't just try it again? I just went to Petty Officer Les Barrios. He was a SEAL motivator on base. Rest in peace, brother. Because I would never be SEAL if not you. But so he passed away now. I went to him and say like, I want to be a SEAL. I passed the test, but now I don't know what to do. They told me I have to wait a year or 2 years. It is my medical record that I had a kidney stone. He's like, oh, okay, well, let's go see the test first. So I passed the test again. He say, oh, go get your medical record. Let me take a look at it. So he arrived at the chat. I ran to the records. I got my medical record. I brought it to him. He said, okay, step outside. He was in his office. I could hear comes back. Hey, are you sure you had a kidney stone? I was like, well, hold on. Let's find this paper. Where's the medical record with a kidney stone? So we just go one by one. I don't see any. Are you sure you had a medical kidney? You had a kidney stone? It's like, no, I don't think I had ever. Yeah, that's absolutely.
Could have been in a bowel obstruction or something. I don't know. It's not in there, though. I definitely didn't have it.
Yeah, so here.
I was such a great medic. I really didn't mess with your records too much.
Too much. So then graduating from the A school.
Depends on what you needed.
Yeah, as a top recruiter, I got my eventual. I had to wait because I think the process for me, since I was born in a different country, was a little bit different. So eventually I got my orders to BADS. And the rest of the history, I left.
Isn't that the greatest feeling?
Oh, God. I mean, that was.
I remember when those came in. I couldn't believe it when I saw it, when you see that number tattooed on that.
Marcus Melanie, when I got these orders, when I told I can't go to BADS, the only thing I can compare to it when I got my immigrational visa from U.S. Embassy. Aww. When I was walking back home, it was like, I am free man. Yeah. I knew I was not yet, but I already seen myself as a free man.
I'll never forget it. So, when they dropped that packet in front, I felt completely different. Yep. And it was just the beginning.
Yep.
Like, we still had to go get our asses kicked and then go through hell. But I mean, it was such a great idea when that concept got dropped in front of me. I remember that very vividly.
Yep.
And then looking at the other guys, because they had their packets and they were saying, look, I'm going to this boat. You know, hopefully we'll see you later. And then some of the guys were all going together. But then when we go through Buka, there's only a handful, if you have anybody else at all.
Oh, I had like two guys with me.
Yeah, I had one other guy. And he was in phase with me, and he made it all the way through. He's still in, I think.
I'm proud of him. Well, I'm sure he wouldn't mind if I say his name. It's Jason Cabell. He was the guy. Brother, he was the closest friend I had at the time. And we worked together. We practiced together. And he was very motivating. He was like a brother to me already. And we end up together in BATS too.
We were
same
PR
school together.
What class?
185. Well, I started with 184. But
all right, so you should have, what is that, a summertime class? Winter, spring, fall?
That was winter time. And 184, but I graduated from 185. I started with 185, and right before the Hell Week, when the flood mats...
Is that El Nino?
Was that? Yeah.
El Nino time frame?
I think
so. All the storms where they had to pack the berms?
Yeah. I think so, because the weather always sucked.
Weather always sucked, yeah. And
I got the MRSA in my leg.
So my swim buddy got that, Tyler.
Yeah, and my leg swollen so bad that I had to actually cut my pants to show up in the morning. And that's like they sent me right away to medical in BATS. And in BATS, like, you, what the hell are you doing here? You know, it's like
that was the worst.
So they said, okay, but before that, I thought I'm smart. So when I know it was festering on me to the point I couldn't put my pants on it. So I say, I just survive till Friday. Friday after work, I will go to Balboa. They will fix me. Monday, I'll be okay. And I'll get resume my training.
What was it?
A hospital. Oh, he got flesh-eating bacteria.
So I went to Balboa. They cut it out. They just like clean it. They put the bandage on it. They send me, okay, you're good to go. So I say, okay, kind of help. Friday, but Saturday was getting worse. Sunday, I had a fever, my legs swollen. I could cut my pants off. So when I show up there, they say, "Okay, well, let's go here." They look at it, say, "The Balboa didn't irrigate it. Basically, they just clean it up and send me." So they lay me on the table. They put the IV, stick the IV in the hole, and just keep for like a couple hours. I was laying there. They were just irrigating. So it helped. And I asked to go back to my class. They say, no, because now we're going to flood muds and you'll be in the mud all the time. You're going to get injured. I say, no, I'm good. Say, no, you're not good. And they knew that I can't. So I say, I want you to run 10 laps around the courtyard up there and this thing. So, you know, they were just like, say, I will not finish those runs. They just tell me to, just, okay, run. So I keep running and I finished it. So now can I go back to my class? No, we can't let you go in the training now with this open wound like this.
Oh, my gosh.
So they rolled me back. And I was angry. I was sad. But, you know, I start from the very beginning again with class 185. And I graduated with class 185.
Did you go back to Hell Week again?
I didn't go to Hell Week. I just, it was right before the Hell Week.
Oh, you're sorry. Yeah. That's what happened to me.
Yeah. Same thing happened to me. And right before that, I got rolled. So, but then next go around.
So I feel like guys who make it all the way through in the first try, that they're kind of pussies. Because they don't. I'm sorry. You know, I mean, anybody who can make it through in the first time. They always brag about it. Those one guys, man. I'm like, no, I got full benefit. Me and Drew, man, we hung back.
Yeah. We did it twice.
If you're going through BATS, don't hang back. Make sure you can get your ass through there because it sucks.
Marcus started with 226 and graduated 228.
About 28.
Yeah, thanks.
Full bennies. I broke my leg in Monster Mash after Hell Week.
Yeah, but I would like to come back to Poland for a little bit too, if I can. So when it happened, first I would like to just come back to the to prison time. So this is what I learned when I met real heroes. Because our idea was like, we had a pretty good story, so we all denied. It's like, well, it didn't happen. That's not true. We got prison sentence anyway. But when I met people who, and in my book, I have that actually the full speech. So they get some of the guys that like very prominent guys. I'm talking here about Andrew Krasuski, and many others, but particularly Andrew Krasuski. He was a leader of Solidarity in his town. He was an engineer. He didn't deny anything. He just went up and schooled the communist judges, the military judges, what the freedom means. He would be shot for that. It was 1940s, 50s, he would be killed. And he still could. We didn't know what will happen. So basically he said, yes, I did it. But I'm guilty as charged. But I'm innocent of what you are accusing me of being anti-Polish or anti-thing. I fought for free Poland, and I'm still fighting for free Poland. Basically, he gave the speech, and to the point that it was the judges, the people were embarrassed, the people who were allowed to listen to it were laughing, because he made the whole communist system look so absurd. And eventually he came to the point even that I just didn't have anything on him. That speech, his speech is in my book. I think everybody ought to read it. That's courage. Mm-hmm. That's courage. And so the judge said, yeah, but you were attacking party officials, making mockery of them and making people laugh at them. He said, well, he basically said that humor is nothing wrong with humor. If we can't laugh, I mean, the oppressive state becomes even more oppressive, what you created. So they said, well, let me read to people here and let them judge if this is humor or if this is just malicious attacking of party officials. And he read, it was so comical. And I think I have a quote from him, what the poem was. People were laughing. They were scribbling everything on that poem. On the piece of papers, later it was spread like a wildfire around Poland because it was so funny. You know, they was making fun from the party officials. So the judge like, well, I guess my tactics didn't work. So instead of making Andrew look more repulsive, he make him look like a hero more. And
I'd never heard it put like that. But yeah. If you start making things that are supposed to be funny and comical and turn those bad, is when we have a problem.
Well, that's what...
Right? When you switch humor into something dark and negative, and it's like, man, right. People don't know how to react.
Right.
You know, if you can't laugh, then we're in trouble.
Right. But he laid it to them, just basically how oppressive Polish state is, how illegal the martial law is, and everything that people were afraid to say, or they were whispering around.
So, which is the worst, when they shut down and they start doing that.
Yeah. But so he just laid up in open, and he was in a communist hands. So they could do with him whatever they wanted to do, and he was risking basically his life. And you know, there's another thing I would like to say about these people, that you know, I was single, I was a young guy, and I had no other families but my mom and my siblings. But there were people in prison who were fathers. Married people have families, and they stood up. They did not cave in. They didn't see any other way but to resist and fight the socialism and communist oppression. So they I admire them, because there's real courage, because you were facing death basically being outspoken. You didn't know how they will turn out. If the Russian invasion will happen, or if the they would be dead. They would be most likely sent to Siberia or in the Soviet Union, or they would be just executed.
And that's a common knowledge fear throughout the land. Like, hey, if you screw up that bad, they're going to send you up to Siberia, man. And that's, very rare you come back from that.
Yes.
So are the Polish afraid of all the Russians?
They were not afraid of Russians. They hated them. But you know what? Let me say this. Not the Russians. I found Russians very warm and honest people. What we need to remember is that the Russians are who suffer the most under communism. There's around, 60 million victims of the Soviet Union, mostly Russians. So when Russians free themselves, Russians is not communist anymore. It's not a socialist state anymore. It's not. People still think of it, but it's not. Russians don't like communism and socialism. You know, there are some groups. Just like we have a socialist and communist sympathizer, socialist sympathizers in our country. Russians have to. They are there everywhere. But Russians, I find their, I don't know if you ever listened to their music. If you ever talk to these people, they are very warm, welcoming people. Those are not the Russians that very often are painted here. The Soviet, the Russian government by Russians is evil. The socialist system is evil. But most Russians are not socialists, not communists. Most Poles are not socialists, not communists. Most Americans are not socialists, not communists. Russians hate that socialism as much as and communism as anybody else on earth because they suffer the most. Please remember also about it that whether it was Poland, Hungary, on the or Czechoslovakia, East Germany, there was not East German, there was not Russians murdering people there. In Poland, there were Polish socialists and communists murdering people and enslaving people. In Romania, there were Romanians who were Romanian socialists and communists. They were enslaving and murdering people, sending them to prisons. And in Russia, there were Russians too who were enslaving and persecuting Russian people. Russians are, but Russians, but if you look by the numbers of victims of socialism, are the most persecuted nation in the world. We need to remember that. Let's don't throw all the Russians in the one basket. I found them very warm. If you ever listen to the folk music, it's beautiful. These people are so musical. So we just need to understand these differences.
Yeah. It's not the people, it's the government.
Thank you, everybody, for listening in on this awesome episode with Drago and his wife, Rachel. Please stay tuned. Next week, we'll be dropping part 2.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.